What a great concept, walking with Jesus. This is what it's all about. And I know for some of you, maybe if you're new to church, or maybe if you grew up in a different denomination, or maybe a different kind of church, this is sometimes a bit of a different way to think about our faith, right? That we're actually walking with this person, that we're following this person who lived a couple thousand years ago. But this is really the core of our faith. The core of our faith is that our relationship with God, or a relationship with God, is something that can be active, something that can be applied to life, in everyday life. That's certainly what we're going to talk about today. My name's Clay Scroggins, really grateful to meet you. One of the greatest blessings of my life is get to be a part of Faith Bridge Church. And so if you're new here, if you're kicking the tires on this place, wondering, should I make this my church? I can't think of a better church that you could be a part of than this church. There's some just absolutely amazing people. There's a few sketchy ones as well, but mostly really wonderful people. I'm just kidding. All wonderful people. Here's the big concept that we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about this simple idea, is that everybody wants to be great. Everyone wants to be great. In fact, if you're sitting by somebody, just give them a little elbow, maybe a pound, and say, it's in you. I know it's in you. You want to be great. We all want it. I know, listen, I'm the first to admit that I want to be great. I've wanted it ever since I was a little kid. There was something in me ever since I was a child that wanted to make something of this life. And there's a lot of different strategies, a lot of different routes that you take. The one that I took was, I got to go get some power. Because power makes you great. That didn't move me to the weight room, but it did move me to become a member of the safety patrol in elementary school. Anybody else on the safety patrol? Yeah. For some of you, you care deeply about safety. And the rest of you are like me, you just wanted the power that sash brought you, right? To be able to stop a couple of tons of metal with just a gesture of your hand. That's power. I played baseball growing up. I played baseball on our high school baseball team. I was good enough to make it. Unfortunately, I was not good enough to get much playing time, but I was very eager to become the captain of the team because I thought that would give me power. I was always running for office in high school. I have this weird fetish of trying to incorporate rap songs into campaign slogans. If my parents were worried, and I assume that they were, I can totally understand why. It was weird, it was odd, but it was my thing. For some of you that were, maybe if you graduated high school in the 90s, you also were maybe a big fan of the rapper Juvenile. Juvenile's big hit was Back That Thing Up. And I had a slogan that I printed on little postcards and put them all over the school that said, back that thing up and vote for Clay. I don't really know why, but that just felt right to me at the time. Destiny's Child had a big hit around that time called Say My Name, Say My Name. Say my name, say my name, and vote for Clay. Again, it doesn't exactly make sense, but it did work. I was elected to be the senior class president. I promised Gatorade and all the water fountains. I never came through on that promise, but isn't that what politics is all about? Empty promises, right? Nonetheless, that was my attempt. That was my attempt at trying to become great. I wanted to make something of my life. Maybe you took that strategy as well, where you were trying to get some power. But others of you, you tried to become great at something, right? You tried to become great at your hobby or great at your profession or great at your sport or great at your instrument, whatever it is that you do. Why? Well, because we all know people who are great at something, and therefore people idolize them. People give them power. People think that they have some superpower, right? But we all know this to be true, that just because you're great at something doesn't mean you're great, right? Now, see, this is what Jesus does in this conversation we're going to have today, this passage we're going to look at in Mark 10. In fact, if you've got, we've got some amazing volunteers that have some Bibles. If you want to go ahead and pass those out, that would be tremendous. If you need a Bible, raise your hand, throw it up in the air, and we would love to give you that. That would be our gift to you. You're welcome to just borrow it even for the day. But the question we're going to try to wrestle with today is, what if we've all been chasing the wrong version of greatness? What if we've been chasing this version of greatness that is just misguided? There's nothing wrong with us that we want it. There's nothing wrong with us that we're chasing it. But as we're going to see in this passage, Mark chapter 10, verse 35 is where we're going to start. This is such an incredible moment in the life of Jesus, where his closest followers are dealing, they're grappling with a question that is as relevant today as it was then. Now, the context of this, let me give you a little bit of context of where we are. Jesus, at this point in his ministry, he is no longer just speaking to crowds, which he did, right, during the Sermon on the Mount. He's no longer just doing miracles, though he still is going to perform a few miracles. But no, Jesus is very intentional about where he's headed. He is headed straight to Jerusalem. He's going to eventually be put on trial. He's headed straight to the cross. And as we're leading up to just a couple of weeks from Easter, in this chronological story of the life of Jesus, this look at what was happening in his life, we pick up with this really important moment. Now, he had just told his closest disciples, he had just given them a bit of prophecy. He had just foreshadowed what was to come, told them a really important moment was about to come. He said, I am going to be put on trial. I am going to give up my life. I'm going to die. But then 3 days later, I'm going to rise again. And it's as if someone just told you some of the most meaningful and important news about their life. And his disciples basically just go, okay, cool. What's for lunch? I mean, they give it no attention. They give it no interest. They just move right past it because, like us, all they can think about is, what's in it for me? What's my role to play in all of this, right? Which is where we pick up. Jesus has just told them this really important information. And then James and John, I love that Mark reminds us, these are the sons of Zebedee. Does anybody know Zebedee's direct translation, what his name means? The sons of thunder, the sons of thunder. Yeah, if you're looking for a wrestling nickname, by the way, if you're thinking about dabbling in amateur or pro wrestling and you have a brother, I would encourage you to go with the sons of thunder. I think that would be a tremendous wrestling name. I don't know why. That's just what I've always thought about James and John. I think that would be tremendous, and you're welcome to have it and use it. You don't even need to give me, you're probably going to be tempted to give me credit for it. Don't even feel like you need to, okay? It's yours. Just own it as your own. James and John, sons of Zebedee, they sneak up to Jesus after Jesus had just dropped this really important information, and they say, teacher, we want for you to do for us whatever it is we ask. How many of you have kids in the home? Or how many of you have had kids in the home? You know that feeling? My wife and I, we're celebrating our 20-year anniversary this fall, and we've got 5 kids of our own, and they range from 17 down to 8. And so the most common question that they ask me, Dad, can I have your credit card? That's the most common thing that they ask me these days is, may I have your credit card, right? And whenever they ask me that, honestly, I feel I'm good with it because I'm grateful that you're still coming to me for a need. I'm fine with that. However, I do require a bit more information. I would like to know a little bit more about why you need it, right? Well, this is the disciples' version of that. This is their version of, Jesus, can we have your credit card? Because we have some things that we need, right? And Jesus graciously responds to them and says, what is it that you want me to do for you? What is it? He also required a bit more information. He's like, yeah, okay, I'm not saying no. I'm not saying the answer is absolutely not, but I would like to know a little bit more about why in which you're asking for this. And so they go ahead. They probably look at each other and they go, you want to tell him? No, you tell him. No, it was your idea. You say it. So one of them reluctantly, or maybe confidently, says, let us sit at your right, and then let the other one sit on your left when you enter into your glory. When you establish your kingdom, when you take over, when you set up shop, we see where this is headed. You're gonna take over and you're gonna take names. And when you do, we wanna be attached to you. This is their strategy, right? Not a bad one. It's a very common strategy. I mentioned, a lot of us have different strategies on how to become great. Some people want to get in power. Some people want to get some power for themselves. Some people want to get really good at something. And then others, it's just about who you know, right? You just want to know somebody famous. You just want to be friends with the person who's famous. You got that friend, right? The name dropper friend that loves to tell you who they just had lunch with. They love to tell you who they know. They love to tell you whose party they're attending, right? That's James and John. That's all they were trying to do, is they just wanted to, they wanted in on the action. They're going, hey, we got no chance of becoming great. We're just little old nobodies. Our best shot at becoming great is to sit at your right and the other one to sit at your left. Now, this is really important, because Jesus does not criticize them. He does not condemn them. He does not seem to judge them. It seems as if he's saying, you're not wrong to want greatness. That hopefully that would be encouraging to you. To say, hey, there's nothing wrong for wanting to be great. In fact, I think it's in you to want it. I think it is the reflection of your creator that you want to not just become great, but to make something out of your life, or to make something with your life, or to do something good with your life. I think it's a reflection of the creation mandate. They're not wrong to want greatness. They're just wrong about the way it works. They're not wrong to want it. They're just misguided in how it actually works. You know the creation mandate in Genesis chapter 1? Creation mandate, two big things that God tells Adam and Eve to go and do. Number one, he says, be fruitful and multiply. That's the fun part. Number two, he says, go and subdue the earth. He says, go and, in a sense, go and bring order to things. Go and make things. Go and design things. Go and harness all the power of the natural resources that I have given you, and go make something good out of them. Go bring order to them in such a way that they flourish, right? Do not try to control them for your own sake. Do not try to get them in order so that you become great. No, leverage them in such a way that they bring good to the people around you. Again, nothing wrong with wanting it, but we're all misguided about the way we go about it. Now, interesting aside here, the next verse says, when the 10 heard about this, they became, what's the word? When the 10 heard about this, they became indignant. Isn't that a great word? When's the last time you were indignant about something, right? Some of you, it's been recently that you have been indignant about something, but you didn't call it that, right? We don't use that word near enough. I like it. The other 10, the other of Jesus' closest disciples, his closest followers. And now listen, why were they indignant? Maybe they were indignant because they go, James and John, how selfish of you. James and John, Jesus has always said he wants us to be great. But it's not about just sitting at his left and sitting at his right. It's not about just gaining more power. It's not about just collecting more stuff. It's not about being attached to a famous person. No, remember, he's told us this numerous times before, that there's another way to become great. There is a way to leverage what you have for the sake of other people. And that's really what greatness is all about. Is that why they were mad? Why do you think they were mad? I think you're right. I think they were mad because they got to him first. Because they're going, we wanted to ask him the same thing. And we're all on the starting line. And we said, on your mark, get set. And then you didn't even wait for go. And you just jumped. And you just went after him. And you beat us to it. That would be my guess. Maybe not. Maybe they did have altruistic, meaningful reasons why they were upset. But I think they were grumpy because they got to Jesus first. And Jesus does this thing, right? It's one of those moments where we wish we could have been there. He so graciously, kindly, lovingly gathers them together. You've had this. If you've got a family or you got a group of friends, you've had that moment, you know, where you're like, all right, everybody put your screens down. We got to talk about something, right? Everybody put your tablets down, put your phone down. We got to chat. We got to have a chat, right? And Jesus does that. He calls them all together, and then he tells them something that is incredibly important for us today. Here's what he says, verse 41. Jesus calls them all together and he says, you know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles, you know how they lord it over them? They make them feel inferior because they're the boss. They make them feel like, oh, you're a nothing, I'm a huge deal, because I have all the power and you have none. They work so hard to hold on to their power and maintain their power. And then look at what he says next. And how the high officials, they exercise their authority over them. You know how they do that? And in a way, that's still happening today, right? Because I think we took that creation mandate and it's the perversion of it, that we've perverted it and we think, oh, we got to get things under our control. We got to get things under our lock. We've got to lock things down in such a way that it maintains our power, that it maintains our popularity, that we got to protect what we have, right? It's common for all of us to do that. In fact, I don't think it necessarily means that we're evil that we do it. This is my guess, is that most people don't misuse power because they're evil. They misuse power because they don't know what the power is actually for. You've had a boss like that? Maybe there's somebody that you think of in local public office or state office or federal office that you look at and you go, yeah, I don't know that it's evil. I just don't know that they know why they're in the role that they're in. I don't know that they really understand what the purpose of the power is. Everybody's got a perspective of it, but the truth is it's true of us as well, that we're just as guilty of it. That we all are tempted to go, ooh, I want to go get in charge. I want to go get the power. I want to go get great at something. I want to go become friends with the famous person so that it gives me some worth, so that it does something for me. And Jesus is going to tell them, there's nothing wrong with you wanting to be great, but there is something wrong about the way you use it when you get it. About 8 years ago, I published a book called How to Lead When You're Not in Charge. And I was a pastor really trying to write to other pastors. And now it's turned into a career of mine. I talk about it at least once a week, usually in corporate settings. Because what I didn't know is what I was trying to write for pastors, I didn't realize was such a universal issue in anybody's workplace, which is we all want to be in charge. And if we're in charge, we think that we're a leader. And if we're not in charge, we think that we're not. And Jesus says, that's not the way it works. Yeah, everybody wants to get more authority, or a lot of people want to get more authority, but that doesn't make you more of a leader. Because leadership's really about cultivating influence to move people to do the thing they don't want to do, to accomplish what it is they want to accomplish. There's some of you that have a lot of authority. There's some of you that have a lot of influence. But all of us have a portion of each. And Jesus's point is not whether you should or whether you shouldn't have it. His point is, how are you using it? There's nothing wrong with wanting to be great. There's nothing wrong with wanting to be in charge. There's nothing wrong with not being in charge. But what are you doing with it? What are you doing with your seat in the organization? What are you doing with your seat in your family? What are you doing with your position, wherever it is that you are? Are you using it for yourself? Or are you lording it over others and exercising your authority over other people? And then Jesus gives us these four words that I hope will ring throughout your memory, that God will use them to be anchors within our soul to help remind us of who he has called us to be. Look at these four words that he says. Jesus looks straight. It's almost like he puts his finger in the chest of every single one of his disciples and says, not so with you. Isn't that powerful? He says, come on. I made you. I made you for more. Don't settle for just wanting to be great. There's nothing wrong with that, but that's not the point of just using it for yourself. No, you're to be different. If I've given you a portion of authority, if I've given you a bit of influence, I want you to do something with it. And what I don't want you to do is just use it for yourself. No, come on. Don't be like the rest of them. I made you to be different. Not so with you. Then he continues. He says, not so with you. He says, instead of doing it the way everyone else has done it, instead, I want you to do it a different way. Here's the way I want you to do it. He says, instead, whoever wants to become great, and I'm sure he cut his eyes at James and John, you know, like, I'm talking to the two of you in case you didn't pick it up. And they're like, we got it, right? Instead, whoever wants to be great among you must become a servant. And whoever wants to become first must become a slave of all. I mean, he's flipping life upside down. He's saying things that eventually led, if you remember Jim Elliot, the famous missionary who gave his life for this people group in Peru that would never hear the name of Jesus otherwise. Jim Elliot said it this way. He said, he's no fool to give something that he cannot keep for something that he cannot lose. In fact, you're a fool to do the opposite. You're a fool to give your life for something that you're going to eventually lose. But he says, no. It's not foolish to do that. In fact, it's foolish to do the opposite. He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. And he's getting that from Jesus, who said, don't give up the very thing that is eternal for this temporary thing, for this reputation or this power on earth or wealth on earth or this thing that you're going to eventually lose. There's going to come a day, this is wild, but in 50 years, nobody's going to remember anyone's name. Most people can hardly tell you who their great grandparents were. So why cling to this power that you're going to eventually lose when you could use it to do something that would actually create eternal value? Yeah, Jesus is trying to remind us. He's trying to help us understand that greatness is not about how much you collect in life, whether it's collecting wealth or collecting power or collecting followers or collecting reputation. He's saying that's not what greatness is about. Greatness is about how much of your life you give away. You ever been to a funeral of somebody who gave away a lot? It's breathtaking. It's awe-inspiring. It's so moving, right? To go, oh my gosh, this is so good for me to be reminded that all the things I get caught up with to try to build a life for myself are eventually going to waste away. But the thing that really counts, the thing that really matters is, am I using the authority that I have? Am I using the power I have for someone else? Some of you have a voice. You have a voice in your organization. You have a voice in your family. You have a voice with your friends. Are you using your voice to make a name for yourself? Or are you speaking up for people that have less? Some of you have power. You have a position. Are you using your position to help someone else, or are you just using it for yourself? It's a simple choice that we get. When I first started this, I was working as a pastor for 20 years. 2021, I resigned from my job, thinking that I wanted to do this full time, which is what I have since been doing. And so now I work for myself. And so it's all about getting booked to go do things. When some of you have your own business and you understand, or your own ministry, and you understand how that works, right? It's like, well, if I'm not getting booked, this ain't gonna work. And I remember about a couple of years ago, I was so feeling the anxiety of that when God reminded me of this simple passage of saying, hey, you know what would actually help your own health? If you worried about helping other people get on a stage more than you're worrying about yourself getting on a stage. What if you took your connections, you took your network, and instead of trying to work your network to get more work for yourself, what if you said, I'm going to try to work my network to get work for other people? But what's the fear? The fear is, well, who's going to watch out for me? What do you think God would say to that? I think a loving Father in heaven would say, I would like to be the one to watch out for you. So what about you? What are you all worried about? What are you all concerned about in keeping it for yourself? What if you made this shift? What if you made the not so with you shift and said, yeah, there's nothing wrong with wanting to be great, but what if I took what God has given me and instead of using it to make myself great, what if I used it to make someone else great? That is the Jesus way. You don't need authority. You don't need authority to lead. You can have influence to be a leader in any position, in any level, in any organization. But the question is, when you get authority, Jesus makes it really clear what it's for. The point of it is to leverage it for other people. There's nothing wrong with wanting to be great. You can get success. You can try to chase popularity. You can try to chase fame. It's going to leave you empty. But if you chase Jesus's path to greatness, it leads to the good life. It leads to the life that at the end of life, people go, that seemed worth it. You get a choice. You get a choice to make. And here's the ultimate beauty of the whole deal, is that Jesus stood in front of his followers and said, I'm not just going to tell you what to do. I'm going to show you. If you're confused, if you don't really understand the mission, if this feels too complicated for you, just watch me, he says. This verse this whole passage leads up to Mark 10, verse 45. And I remember 20 years ago in seminary in Dallas, Texas, a professor saying, the whole gospel of Jesus hangs on this verse. Jesus's life pivoted in this moment right here in Mark chapter 10, verse 45, where he said, even the Son of Man did not come to be served, though I could have, because all power in heaven and earth is under my control, under my command. And I could have demanded that everybody served me, but I didn't do that. Even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. So much so that he offered him his life. So much so that Jesus says, I'm going to offer up my life as a ransom for many. I'll never forget my good friend Sangram Vajre, who put his faith in Jesus about 15 years ago. And I remember getting the opportunity to baptize him. And he grew up in a household of Sikhs. He married a woman who grew up in a Hindu culture. And both of them put their faith, just radically fell in love with Jesus. And I remember just asking him, Sangram, this just doesn't happen often. So pardon my innocence of my question, but why? Why Jesus? And I'll never forget sitting at lunch with him and him saying to me, he said, because it was so easy for me. He said, my whole life, everybody was demanding all the things that I needed to do to serve the gods. He said, and then I find out that Jesus, the God, came down to serve me. I'm on his side. I'll take him. It's radical. It's transforming. And it's why the cross, I think of it as the ultimate inversion of authority. This is what Martin Luther called the great trade, where Jesus, who had all the power, became nothing so that people who were nothing could become something, could become sons and daughters of God. That the most powerful one who could have demanded people serve him, he did not. Instead, he chose to serve. And then he looks at us and he says, your turn. What are you going to do? I had all the power and I gave it all away. I used it on behalf of other people. What are you going to do with yours? Father, I just pray that we would continue to be a church that is recognized by this, that this would be our calling card, that this would be our reputation, that we would not be known for our wealth, that we would not be known for our power, that we would not be known for our influence, but we would be known as a group of men and women who believed you and followed you, who gave what we had away for others, who used what we had for the sake of others. May it be so with us. God, in your mercy and in your grace, may it be true of us. God, may we live the kind of life that at the end of life, that you would look at us and say, well done, my good and faithful servant. You could have used it all for yourself, but you didn't. way to go. Father, I hope that's true of me. I hope that's true of us. And I pray that that meaningful and that longing that's inside of us, that meaningful declaration from you of saying, well done, would be what motivates us to give away the very thing that we can't even keep in the first place so that people can have the very thing that no one could ever take away. We pray all this in the matchless and the powerful name of Jesus. Amen.